got a sprain or an itch, pain that's swelling or twitch, call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky. Call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, Medical Director and Physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. For those of you who are readers or have watched movies, you may be familiar with the term deep thought. This character is a fictional computer in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You remember that one? This led me to today's starting topic, that being thought. What is thought?
The online dictionary definition is that thought is an idea or opinion produced by thinking or occurring suddenly in the mind. This then begs the question, what is thinking?
Again, the dictionary definition is that thinking is the process of using one's mind to consider or reason about something or occurring suddenly in the mind.
Better, but not what we were looking for. Remember that this is a medical show, so I would like to think of thought as a medical or at least biological process.
According to the Wikipedia, thought or thinking is a mental process which allows beings, it's us, to model the world and so to deal with it effectively according to their goals, plans, ends, and desires. Words referring to similar concepts and processes in the English language include cognition, sentience, consciousness, idea, and imagination.
Thinking thought involves the cerebral manipulation of information, as when we form concepts, engage in problem-solving, reason, and make decisions.
Thinking is a higher cognitive function, and the analysis of thinking processes is part of cognitive psychology. By the way, be careful when verbally asking your phone or computer the definition of thought using your voice. I did several times and got a rather strange definition. My Alexa told me that a thought is a woman who has many casual sexual encounters or relationships. Now that took me by surprise until I looked at the screen and the word thought, which was plainly spelled T-H-O-T, and not thought, which is what I was looking for. My advice here is always be careful what you say. People and machines may oft lead you astray. At least that was my thought on the subject. So what is thought neurobiologically?
To begin with, let's see just how big the brain is. If you make a fist out of both hands and bring your palms and middle knuckles together, that's about how big your brain is.
The brain is made of cells which are, for lack of a better word, called neurons, which connect to each other through long, thin tentacles called axons to create a vast web of linked cells. To me, they look like spider webs.
As your brain develops, there are more and more central neurons. Maybe initially there are just two. Then a third is created and a connection is made interconnecting the three neurons. Then four, five or more until there are millions of connections between the neurons in our brains.
In the beginning, even computers for a long period had a hard time figuring out the best route. For example, for someone to travel from one place to another, you may wish to travel from Jacksonville, Florida to Seattle, Washington, a trip of about 2,981 miles. When I was young, we had to use an actual map and figure it out using our brains, as the GPS was not yet invented, at least for civilian use.
Anyway, as computers and computer programs progressed, certain applications were then able to give us a better and faster and more detailed description of the best route to follow.
But this was not as simple as it seems. We as humans were very adept at looking for a shortest route. We could immediately reject all routes that went through, let's say, Bangor, Maine. It did not take long for our brains to see that this city was way off the path of the shortest route. Our eyes told us so.
By computers, were designed to look at every single route and then compare the distance to finally tell us which was the shortest. There could conceivably be millions of routes, 90% of which your eyes would have rejected immediately.
Now, however, with advances in computer thought, there's a faster way, using what I initially called fuzzy logic that's used in computers. Now, I really don't want to get into that too much, so suffice it to say that fuzzy logic is a form of logic that employs handling the concept of partial truth, where the truth value may range between completely true and completely false. By contrast, computers were using something called Boolean logic. The truth value of variables may only be the integer value 0 or 1.
Fuzzy logic is based on the observation that people make decisions based on imprecise and non-numerical information. Fuzzy logic has been applied to many fields, from control theory to artificial intelligence.
As more and more neurons are made, more and more connections are linked in the brain, both internally and to other parts of the body. As more and more linkages are made, some of these separated connections begin to interconnect larger groups of connections to others, making even bigger groupings. When you have a thought, an electrical signal passes back and forth between the various neurons responsible for that thought. The brain is always trying to become more efficient.
So every time two cells communicate, the brain builds a connection that makes it easier for them to do so in the future. It does this by building a myelin sheath around the axon, which facilitates the transmission of the electrical signal.
The more you have a thought, the more myelin sheath is built up. And the better the sheath, the easier it is for electrical signals to pass between cells. The easier it is for the electrical signals to pass, the easier it becomes to have the same thought in the future. Now, there's one cute saying that I remember, made by Dr. Donald O. Hebb, the father of neuropsychology. He said, "Neurons that fire together wire together." The process can be thought of as similar to the way, let's say, a construction crew might add another lane to a well-traveled street to make it easier for cars to travel.
Every time you have a thought, it's like giving a signal to the construction crews that more traffic is coming. So they prepare by building more infrastructure.
Now, this should remind you of how habits are formed. Habits are simply neurological patterns that build up networks of probabilities by forming memory traces along the pathways between your brain cells. There's a term that you should understand to more easily understand thought processes, and this is neuroplasticity.
Throughout our lives, the connection between neurons are continuously growing and changing. That is what is usually referred to as neuroplasticity, with plasticity meaning the ability of something to be molded or changed.
When you practice learning or thinking in new ways, your brain cells, they rearrange themselves to better serve you in the future. No matter how old you are or what current mental state you're in, you can change the structure of your brain and improve the way you think.
It is one reason why cramming for exam may work for a day or two, but for long-term learning, it's consistency that counts.
Even established infrastructure causing thought traffic to head in a bad direction can be changed over time. When you don't revisit a thought or memory, the brain takes it as a signal that it's no longer important.
It's been shown over and over again that just thinking about something can cause your brain to release neurotransmitters, chemical messengers that allow it to communicate with parts of itself and your nervous system.
Neurotransmitters control virtually all of your body functions, from hormones to digestion. Molecules called neurotransmitters are in constant flux throughout the brain, manufactured and released by the billions of neurons a human brain processes. These orchestrate how we feel and how we react.
To relay information, the neurons use small chemicals called neurotransmitters, which are released from one neuron and received by another using receptors that recognize the neurotransmitter and pass the information onto the cell body.
Let's start with the one that we've talked about any number of times on this show, dopamine, what we may call the pleasure, reward, and motivation neurotransmitter. Without pleasure, we would not be here. Eating, sex, and happiness are all things that make us feel good. As a consequence, we seek them out.
Of all the neurotransmitters in the brain, dopamine is the one most associated with pleasure, though endorphins also play a large part.
Everything that makes you feel good is down to dopamine and the effect it has on the brain. Moreover, every known addictive substance affects dopamine release in what's known as the brain's reward pathway. Now, this is the equivalent of a neurological circuit connecting experience with feeling good. Dopamine also plays a role in positive reinforcement and dependency, making a person more likely to repeat pleasurable actions and become addicted to substances that give this feeling.
The effect of dopamine is regulated by its receptors that reside throughout the brain. Alongside pleasure, these receptors ensure the involvement of dopamine in a range of activities, from movement and attention to memory.
Drugs such as cocaine and amphetamines lead to a sharp temporary rise in dopamine within the brain. But everything isn't roses with dopamine. It's just not quite that simple. Dopamine isn't just a happy transmitter. Maybe dopamine is a motivational rather than simply a pleasure transmitter or stimulator.
Why have we changed its name from a pleasure to a motivational transmitter? Well, because it increases a person's motivation to repeat an action even when not associated with a pleasurable feeling.
The term glutamate always sounded to me like a food additive, but it's really the brain's on switch. It is, in other words, known as an excitatory neurotransmitter.
Whatever glutamate finds a receptor to dock with, it causes the hosting neuron to become excited.
An excited nerve is one that's more likely to fire, and that can result in the release of its own unique mix of several neurotransmitters. Glutamate receptors come in two varieties. One is called ionotropic and the other metabrotropic. Let's start with the first.
Ionotropic receptors are so called because they form channels for ions to move through when glutamate binds to them. Ionotropic glutamate receptors are NMDA.
On the other hand, metabotropic glutamate receptors act a little more indirectly. Now here comes that food relationship. It can crop up in foods, either alone or in its flavor-enhancing form. You may have heard of it. Monosodium glutamate, often known as MSG. This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center.
I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 33 years.
We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care.
Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. In the first part of the show, we were talking about thought and brain chemicals, and we're going to continue on that subject right after this.
Now, GABA, G-A-B-A, is gamma-aminobutyric acid, and it's another neurotransmitter. It seems that its sole purpose is to slow things down, dampen, and inhibit nervous activity.
Just like glutamate, the GABA receptors are split into two types. GABA A receptor responds to GABA binding by allowing the flow of ions across nerve membrane. The GABA B receptors involve intermediaries in the process.
Drugs that stimulate these receptors tend to slow the brain down, so it's no surprise to discover alcohol affects these receptors. Drug-activating GABA receptors are found everywhere. Liquid ecstasy, or GHB, has become well known as a date rape drug, while other activators such as the benzodiazepines are used in clinical contexts, and those are used to help people get more sleep or lessen anxiety. 95% of the body's serotonin is actually in the gut, but the 5% in the brain has a big effect on mood and how people feel about themselves and the external world at a point in time.
As you might expect, laying the burden of something as complex as mood on a single molecule could be oversimplifying things a little. But remarkably, this simple molecule does have a big impact on your mind.
The link between serotonin and how you feel is down to a large variety of serotonin receptors throughout the brain. Part of the reason the behavioral effects of this single transmitter can be so complex is due to the number of different serotonin receptor types and the range of effects they can have. These effects include causing the levels of numerous other neurotransmitters to be increased or decreased throughout different brain regions.
A lack of serotonin in the brain is associated with depression, which is why drugs called SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, such as fluoxetine, Prozac, are commonly prescribed to help treat depression.
Now, drugs like this can cause an increase in the overall level of serotonin in the brain, leading, in many cases, to diminished symptoms. Certain recreational drugs such as MDMA, you may know it as ecstasy, and LSD, which I know is acid, can also stimulate serotonin receptors, leading to altered or extreme moods.
MDMA has two major effects on serotonin. First, it causes it to be released, and then it blocks the receptors involved in its absorption. Both of these cause higher levels of serotonin to remain in the synaptic cleft.
This means that other receptors for serotonin continue to be active, creating the feeling of extreme happiness that MDMA is known for. However, MDMA also depletes the levels of serotonin in the brain, at least in the short term. And this is likely responsible for the come-down phenomenon. After the positive effects of the drug wear off, many users are left feeling down, way down. Now, LSD has a very similar structure to serotonin, meaning that it fits into and activates certain serotonin receptors.
This means that brain processes related to serotonin release are constantly activated, producing feelings of happiness. LSD also affects many other areas of the brain to produce its other psychedelic effects.
Remember acetylcholine? Among other things, acetylcholine appears to play a very important role in learning and memory. The neurons, that's the nerves, that produce this neurotransmitter, cholinergic neurons, are found in several regions in the brain, where when stimulated, they release their stores of neurotransmitter onto the waiting neurons.
But to have any effect, those neurons need to have the right receptors. In this instance, the nicotinic and muscarinic receptors.
How about nicotinic receptors? Yes, one and the same, named after one of the most potent activators, nicotine. It's the reason cigarettes are so addictive.
This allows ions to quickly pass through them when either acetylcholine or nicotine binds to them. Muscarinic receptors are next on the list.
So what the heck is a muscarine? Well, in this case, it's a receptor stimulant and poison extracted from certain mushrooms, which are somewhat akin to those nicotinic receptors, only slower acting. One of the most common blockers of the muscarinic receptors is atropine, which is a natural compound found in certain plants, such as deadly nightshade or mandrake. We're almost finished here because we now have the cannabinoid receptors. Does that ring a bell? Cannabinoid, reefer, pot, weed, Mary Jane, or ganja.
There is no doubt that the brain responds to cannabis. The question is, why would the brain involve the ability to bind to this drug?
In fact, the active component of the cannabis plant, which is THC, or tetrahydrocannabinol. It's a natural mimic of compounds that the human body actually makes on its own. This group of THC-like chemicals made within the body are called the endocannabinoids. They're fatty chemicals that are able to move freely between cells until they find their receptors, called CB1 and CB2.
Once these are activated, a number of pathways are activated, resulting in a diverse array of effects, from reduced experience of pain to movement of the digestive tract, as well as having an effect on mood.
Naturally, somebody told a joke, and a couple of the fellas began to smoke. I took a whiff as the cloud rolled by, and my nose went up like an infield fly. The captain, this blonde fella from Yale, he looked at me and said, "What's the matter with you, baby?" Well, I may be crazy, but I think not. I'd swear to God that I don't smell pot. But who'd hell have pot in Vietnam? He said, "What do you think you've been sitting on?" These funny little plants, thousands of them. Good God Almighty. Pastures of plenty.
And finally, for this discussion, at least, we have the poppy. The poppy is the source of the alkaloid drug opium. One well-known opiate commonly used today for the treatment of severe pain is morphine, named after the Greek god of dreams, Morpheus.
The opiate receptor is distributed throughout the nervous system. They are involved in all of the calming effects, such as pain relief and reduction in anxiety.
The natural partners to the opioid receptors are the endorphins, released during certain activities, such as running. They're actually thought to be responsible for what we often call the runner's high. And guess what? Pain and orgasm.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Hey, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. O'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing sleighing song tonight. Jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana.
We've come to the end of another Hey Doc show.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.